Hello and welcome to episode 2 of I Am The Egg Pod, hosted by me, Chris Shaw. You can find me on Twitter as @ChrisShawEditor. The Egg Pods will take a jaunty stroll through Pepperland, discussing the Beatles and solo Beatles albums with a potpourri of delicious guests. In this episode, I'm joined by not one, but one and another one, yes, you guessed it, two guests. Firstly, we have writer, author, bassist and host... Sorry, I'm going to have to do that again.
You're doing quite well. Oh,
you're doing all right. Yeah.
I nearly said racist.
Shh.
Professional racist.
That is just for the DMs.
Writer, author and racist. In this episode, I'm joined by not one, but another one. Yes, you guessed it. Two guests. Firstly, we have writer, author, bassist, and host of the excellent James Bond podcast, Smirch Pod, John Rain.
Hello.
Hello, John. John Hi. Can be found on Twitter as @MrKenShabby. Secondly, we have a director whose work includes the TV shows Doctor Who and Time Trumpet, and whose movies include Kill List, High Rise, and Free Fire, Ben Wheatley.
Hello. I didn't direct Time Trumpet, though.
Didn't you?
I wrote bits of it. I didn't direct it.
Oh, pants. Can I do that again?
That was a schoolboy error there. It was Wikipedia.
At least he didn't call you a racist.
Secondly, we have paedophile. Right. Secondly, we have a director whose work includes Kill List, High Rise and Free Fire, Ben Wheatley.
Hello.
Hello, Ben. Today we are going to be talking about Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, the Beatles' 1967 epic album. I think my favourite quote is Kenny Everett, who said, "Importantness, it reeks of importantness."
He was right.
Did he say that specifically about this album, or was this just something he said?
What, generally about life?
Yeah, just something he was thinking about.
No, he just said it.
I'm
relating it to Sgt. Pepper because I can't think of another intro.
That's okay.
You might have been talking about his beard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Sgt. Pepper began from Rubber Soul, where Brian Wilson was inspired to create Pet Sounds, and from there on, the Beatles tried to do a bit of one-upmanship. Firstly, I guess, when did you first hear it?
I think it was one of my dad had about, which I have in the other room actually in this house, but I've got his vinyl collection, which he had, three quarters of it was stuff that I think that he'd probably committed to some kind of classical music club thing. So he had like loads of box sets of Haydn and things. And when I looked through them after he died, he'd never listened to any of them. Mm. And then he had the Beatles albums. He had Pepper and he had the White Album. And then I think he had the original Stones. Mm. And there wasn't much else, to be honest. It was quite a small slither of vinyl that I inherited from him. But I remember seeing, I mean, Peppers is something that I was excited about as a kid because of the cover, I think, initially. Yeah. And I was drawn to it for that. And he also, he wrote in all his albums, he had like his initials because they were obviously lending them out to all sorts and getting, you know, and it was a big part of the social scene. But yeah, that was where I first came across it, I guess. I mean, for me, that album's very special because I listened to it the other day. And first of all, I was amazed at how... Because it's mono, isn't it, the original release, and how thin it was. Mm. And listening to it on, as a man of a certain age, I've now gone and bought myself a turntable and to listen to that old vinyl format, because allegedly it's better, but it just sounded really crackly and awful to me. But there you go. But yeah. I think I haven't balanced it out properly. But yeah, how small the album sounded. But then I've thought about them all listening to it on their Dan sets, and it's designed to be listened to through quite small speakers anyway. And in a way, like the reissues of it, like the stereo reissues and the fatter that the sound gets, is kind of almost stepping away from the reality of what that album was. And it was interesting to hear it in the same kind of close to the same way that they would have listened to it on release. And that I found that quite interesting, and just going, wow, this is the actual sound of Pepper, not some kind of new processed and modernized version of it. This would have been something they'd listen to in rooms, small rooms, yeah. As school children, going, oh my God, have you heard this album? It's incredible.
It's almost like the mix was bigger because you've been told it's bigger, and you're kind of interpreting it as a sort of an opera that it actually isn't. It's just a four-track recording.
Yeah, it's still quite deep. It's a deep sound design, but it's not. Obviously, I remember talking to someone a few years ago, and they were saying that the kind of music has been basically influenced by radio technology. Like, if the better the radio's got in broadcasting certain types of sound, then the music changed to kind of take advantage of it.
Yeah.
And the fact that the radio couldn't do bass. So most of these tracks don't have hardly any bass on them, it seems.
Yeah.
And to the modern ear, you kind of go, well, that, you know, you're expecting something that's going to make your trousers kind of slightly tremble as each drum kick hits. But it's not. It's a very considered and very clean sound.
Mm. And the theory was at the time that too heavy bass the needle would actually bounce off the vinyl record as well. But what about you, John?
Just for my parents. My parents used to have this tradition on a Sunday night, presumably after an orgy.
Yeah.
They used to...
the traditional Sunday night
orgy. Swinging.
All tired and sweaty.
Exactly, yeah. Mm. They used to just put on an album on a Sunday night, whether it be like... sometimes they used to listen to like Goons Records or Hancock, and I'd come down and just sit with them after bath before school the next day. And quite often they'd put on Pepper, and it felt like a story, you know, because obviously it was designed partly that way. But as a kid, I remember thinking there's some sort of narrative here, not knowing what that meant. But, you know, you get a little story in each song. And that's what I really liked about this album as a kid. It's like, you know, Benefit of Mr. Kite and Lovely Rita. And then you get the end of the day in the life. And I didn't know what it was as a kid, but, you know, that kind of, you know, the orgasmic ending, as George Martin described it as. That is something as a child that really resonated with me. It was this... As a kid, it was this and the War of the Worlds album, something that got played heavily rotated on those Sunday night sessions. Again, I don't want to get the orgy thing going again. I wasn't involved in any of that.
Yeah. But I recall watching Last of the Summer Wine, but maybe that's...
Credo was big in our house on a Sunday.
Okay. That,
just because there was nothing else on.
Is that Play-Doh with the Cray Brothers?
Yeah. No, it's a religious program that basically feels like you're marking time until something good comes on.
Right, like Highway.
Yeah, it's a kind of early version of Highway.
Right.
It's like songs. It was like the kind of more funky Songs of Praise.
Wow, that sounds good. Wow.
Yeah, no.
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 Oh. yeah, definitely. That's it. It was just a Sunday night, warm feeling from childhood that's still there now. It's just such a sound. Like you said, the sound of it is something that I hadn't heard before.
Mm.
And particularly the remasters. Like you say, the bass was buried in the old ones. But the Giles Martin that came out this year, the bass is just... It's so loud and really, as a bassist, it's just beautiful to hear.
But do you think that's right, though? Do you think a recording should turn up in another form? I mean, is it seen as better or is it just different?
I think it's better, because my argument would be, as many arguments have been throughout years, is that if they could have done, they would have done.
Yeah. I mean, I'm more the other end of it, where I'm kind of thinking about how it was experienced at the time. You know, and I'm interested in that and what... people were listening to then, and what their, you know, what was in the rooms at that moment. That was the historical version of it, but this new version is something else.
Yeah, but the historical versions are still there. They haven't raised them.
Yeah.
So you can have that.
But how do you experience it? You know, when you listen to it, are you listening to the actual version of it, or are you listening to another something that's moved on and is out of its own original historical context?
Yeah, it's definitely the latter. It's something that's moved on with the times. And when you listen to it now with the technology we have now, you appreciate new dimensions of it. Listening to the remaster, Mr. Kite particularly, I heard two or three things I'd never heard before. via the remaster that I'd not heard previously.
Sobbing and screaming.
Yeah.
But I think the point Giles was trying to do, he was trying to do a modern mix of the original mono mix.
Oh, wow, that's complicated. That's meta, isn't it?
It is.
Is he recording it through an old man's ear?
He was, but for a young man's nose. And somehow he did it. He's used all the mono mixes. Lucy in the Sky, for example, the chorus, when that comes in the mono version, is just so powerful.
Yeah.
Mm. And it's lost on the stereo because you've got this weedy little drums coming out of one side and the vocals coming out of the other. And
the organ, the organ in the remaster sounds more weedy than it does in the original.
Yes, yeah.
The original, it sounds like a sort of powerful stabbing thing, but now it's a bit weedy because it's separated out. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, but I do like that. It's not like that's to its detriment. I think it works.
First track, Sergeant Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band. So it starts, you've got the orchestra tuning up.
The crowd were recorded from Beyond the Fringe. George Martin had been there to record Beyond the Fringe, I believe, and used the crowd as the background, the bed, for that bit of the orchestra tuning up.
Could there be some desperate copyright claims?
Well, I don't know.
That was my...
Yeah.
Could be.
Because he also did an album with Peter Sellers and Peter Cook.
Yes, Bridge Over the River Wye.
Yes, yeah, which is awful.
It's not great, no. But it's an interesting document to hear Cook and Sellers doing something together in a record. I mean, Sellers was in Not Only But Also, but most of it got deleted.
Mm.
Did you ever listen to Songs for Swinging Sellers?
Yes.
Yeah.
I've never listened to it, but I've got it, but I just like the cover.
Mm-hmm.
There you go. Never judge a book by cover.
No.
Unless you're blind.
I feel like that about the Spike album, because he's got his head in a... glass jar, but I've never really listened to it that much.
Yeah, that's true. That's one of the Costello ones I haven't really...
No, not Elvis Costello, I mean Spike Milligan.
Oh, well, there you go.
Yeah.
I was going to go Spike.
Yeah, well, you could have gone
Spike. I was showing my knowledge of records there.
Yeah.
That's unbelievable.
So is Spike Milligan's head in a jar?
Yeah, his cover of his album that's called Spike. He's got his head in like a Victorian jar. You know, like
A bell jar. Yeah,
yeah. A bell end jar.
Right.
And he's got his head in there, yeah.
Oh.
So, track one.
Veronica.
Oh, yeah, Veronica.
Yeah. Which has got McCartney on it, so...
Yeah. What are your thoughts on the opening track?
It's great.
Sergeant Pepper. There you go. Track two.
Print.
I remember having to do... I think it was the 20 years of the Beatles, of Sergeant Pepper was when I was at school. And I think I had to write essays on every track for GCSE, and we did them as poetry. Yeah,
wow.
So I've done this in depth, but it's also, you know, I'm slightly scarred by it, having to dig over it. And I remember at the time when it was 20 years of the Beatles, thinking, Jesus, that's a long time.
Mm.
But now here we are. It's 100 years, isn't it, or something? Since then. So, but I think is it the reprise that's got the reprise that's got the drumming, the backbeat thing. I mean that for me, I think the Peppers and the Beatles are all connected in my mind back to Happy Mondays as well, and to the and to Bummed, and to that whole moment.
Mm.
And I think I probably went back to the Beatles to listen to them after experience that moment in music, which was, I guess, my actual in the moment pop music, the only bit of the pop music where I was actually a teenager and buying stuff at that moment, rather than being a spotty music fan and going back and collecting stuff and going, interesting.
Yeah.
But so yeah, I think Bummed and made me go back and re-listen to all the Beatles stuff, and specifically Peppers. And that backbeat thing seems to be, to me, all of the Manchester sound in one drum beat.
I had a similar thing with Britpop. I went slightly back to Beatles during Britpop and found I loved them more.
Yeah, that and the Kinks, isn't it? Britpop.
Yeah, exactly. And I found
Village
that,
Green was the one that just the whole of Britpop, effectively.
It was, essentially, yeah. But I found that Britpop made me sort of move away from modern music and back to this kind of era. And yeah, that first track is kind of what Britpop were doing. They were taking rock, essentially, and then sticking in horn sections and samples and stuff. And yeah, it works so well for that. It's such a lovely marriage of...
Which Britpop specifically? Is it Parklife?
Well, I'm thinking like Supergrass did it a bit. Yeah, Parklife did it.
Yeah. Parklife's very similar, isn't it, in terms of being a concept album of characters. And then there's kind of parallels, isn't there, between it, the Tracy Jacks is She's Leaving Home, kind of, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
If you were to really push it.
Yeah, we'll allow it. But yeah, that track particularly is quite rocky, and then quite a few Britpop albums followed that suit, I think. Kind of not necessarily concept albums, because this by name is a concept album. It's not really. Not like The Who did, you know. But
it is a concept, isn't it?
It's a theme.
It's not an album.
It's
not a straight album, so it's a new concept almost.
Yeah.
It's an original.
But I just mean because the Who got that and carried it along and made it kind of a rock opera type deal.
Yeah, that's a different thing again, isn't it, I guess? Mm.
Well, you could say The Who's Sell Out is more of a concept album.
It is, isn't it? Yeah. Well, the jingles and stuff.
Yeah. Which I may have to pilfer for this podcast.
That was for the edit room floor.
Thud.
I've got so much editing to do when I go back.
Could I just do the phenomes? You could just make me say smart stuff. It's much easier that way. Yeah, I could do the alphabet.
Edit in some syllables and letters.
If, when, the Beatles, McCartney.
While you're editing, that was a lovely cup of tea. Thank you very much.
I'm looking at it. It looks awesome.
You want to get in there before it goes all
tepid. Yeah, it's going to go tepid.
I'm going to have a cup of tea while John and Ben discuss With a Little Help from My Friends.
Ah, well, the song that's allegedly about heroin.
Was it?
People have said so,
It's a bit early for heroin, isn't it?
We just had a cup of tea. Well, originally it was called Bad Finger Boogie when they were jamming it. The reason this is because, from my printout notes here.
From Wikipedia, direct.
Yep. Yep. John had a bad finger while playing piano when they wrote it. That gave birth to Bad Finger.
Ah.
Because they were called the Ivies when they joined Apple. And Paul said, I don't like that name, you're going to be called Bad Finger.
Because of John's bad finger.
Because of John's bad finger. It's lucky it wasn't called Bad Penis.
Bad breath.
But I mean, bad pile.
I mean, that's a bit... Do you reckon he explained the story, or did he just said your bad finger?
I think he said your bad finger. Because didn't John have a dream where it was like your Beatles with an A? The person in John's dream was very much like, do what you're fucking told, all right? And I think that's what happened here as well. Yeah. Macca had that spirit. Said, you're called Bad Finger.
And they never dug it. They never found out about this Bad Finger. That would be a bad night down the pub, wouldn't it, when someone just chimes in with the anecdote. You know you're called Bad Finger because of his bad finger. Oh, God. Really? Oh.
My other fact here, right?
Mm-hmm. Sponsored by the internet.
This is sponsored by Ringo Starr's mouth. What would you think if I sang out of tune? Would you throw ripe tomatoes at me?
They were the original lyrics.
And Ringo said, change it, because when we do live gigs, people will throw tomatoes at me. But of course, they never did live gigs again. Well, it's interesting, when they had that hiatus from touring, because George quit, didn't he, when they came back from touring, he said, I don't want to tour again because it's awful. So they went, right, we'll have a 3-month holiday. And then they all went off and did interesting stuff. Like Paul went off and did The Family Way with George Martin, this soundtrack that's great. George went to India and learned to play sitar and John went to do that film.
How I Won the War.
How I Won the War, yeah. Mm. Yeah, well done.
I remember that.
You did a fist pump there.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's good.
And I could feel it coming, that fact. I was going, can I remember this?
Yeah.
War. Film of war film. Wow. I remember when it was on TV and they used a clip and it was when Lennon looks to camera and goes, I've been killed.
Mm.
And I was talking about someone in the pub about it and they go, no, he got killed years ago. I was like, that's a bit off, innit? You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Horrible. But Ringo did fuck all.
He did actually go and visit John in Spain when he was filming How I Won the War. And that was... Yeah. I think he learnt chess.
Yeah, do nothing.
Yeah.
Is Milligan in that as well?
How I Won the War? I don't know. It might be because it's a Richard Lester film, isn't it?
Crawford, yeah. It's a great film, that.
Yeah, it is. It's got that kind of manic spirit to it.
Well, it's like Catch 22 a bit, isn't it?
Yeah. Kind of... Richard Lester, everyone's sort of talking over each other, being a bit silly. Like the bed-sitting room kind of thing as well.
Yeah.
That vibe to it. But yeah, so Ringo, they gave Ringo this song and he sang it very well, I think.
Especially the last note. He was worried about that.
He was worried about that. What annoys me, have you seen the Yellow Submarine film?
Mm.
They do the Sgt. Pepper's song in the Yellow Submarine film and all the blue meanings, they're a bit freaked out. And then it goes straight into With a Little Help from My Friends and the John character gets up and sings it in the cartoon.
Oh.
Annoys me every time.
You could imagine at the premiere, Ringo goes, yeah. What is going on with this?
I'm getting no love.
This wasn't a documentary.
I might as well have not bloody come.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good. In the Sky, we're veering into Lewis Carroll territory here.
And not LSD.
Not for the first time. Definitely not LSD. No. It was a painting by Julian Lennon.
Yes.
There may have been a hint of LSD inspiring the lyrics.
Yeah. Well, Lewis Carroll and LSD, isn't it, really?
And the fact that's more laudanum, isn't it?
It's such a coincidence. Such a coincidence that it's called Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds, though, isn't it, really?
Yeah. He ate oranges in Nigeria.
That classic. But that was the painting that Paul McCartney's son did.
Yeah, that's.
Well, it's at this point I'll have to bust out. We talked
did
about.
I even
this.
Spell that right? I'm not sure.
We talked about this earlier, but there was when it was the 20-year anniversary. Smith and Jones did. Alas, yes. Smith and Jones did a sketch about Sgt. Pepper, and there's a great bit where they're talking about how Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds is actually LITSWD, which is.
Litswood,
which is a lovely village in Wales where John went on his holidays as a child. And then he goes, and then the narrator goes, well, what about this song? And it plays a clip where the lyrics are, desperate remedies, useless gunships, drowned rats, U-boats, German spies, don't relax until grandma's sober, damsons ripen under gooseberry skies. And then the chorus says, Delta, Roger, Uncle Gun, Sugar, yeah. And then it cuts back to him and he goes, yeah, that was about drugs.
Yeah,
that's all I can think when I hear Lucy in the Sky Diamonds. But it's a great song. It's beautiful as well, because when we talk about the bass line coming out, what's great about it is that you've got this melody on the keyboard, but the bass line's actually descending or ascending, one of the two. So it's actually sort of doing the opposite at the time. And it's such a great thing to listen to, because it's so clever.
He's very inspired by Brian Wilson on his bass lines.
Yes.
But,
I mean, he was a bloody good bass player anyway, but I think Pepper's the one where... I mean, he does a bit in previous albums, but Pepper's really the one where he will record like a guide track and then he'll come back later and work out his masterpiece bass line to then put on. Cause particularly when they go into stereo, you can tell because the bass and the drums are on one side and everything else is on the other. So,
which is a big thing for people who do mashups, isn't it?
It is.
The way that things are stripped out like that. I remember listening, I had Rolled Gold and a broken stereo. And listened to that for about 6 months and then heard the tracks for real. I went, oh my God, it's completely different. I'm just listening to, just a bit of lyrics on one side and some drums. I'm thinking, this is quite avant-garde, this old Stone stuff.
Why is Mick Jagger so famous when he never sings any of the songs?
Or he just sings bits and then drops out like Collier.
Like Collier, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Callback.
The other big audio disaster I had was the Dead Kennedys, and I bought a Dead Kennedys 12-inch and listened to it at the wrong speed for at least 6 months until my mate came around and went, they really don't sound like that. They're much faster. And I was like, my God. But when you go back and listen to all that, like Holiday in Cambodia at the wrong speed, actually sounds like death metal. Like that.
How long have you been listening? Is this your entire record collection?
I've listened to it for ages, yeah, going, God, yeah, I love this. But I think it's because I was tight and I didn't want to pay. I had the chance of buying the album, Bedtime for Democracy, and it was like £9 or something. And this other record, which is the same size, was £2.60. Wow. So I went for the cheaper one. Yeah. And I was a bit gypped because it only had like three tracks on it. Mm. But yeah.
Getting Better. Again, this is more Lewis Carroll. This is from Lewis Carroll's Alice books, and it's pretty well describing the chorus. So, but if you hadn't done them, the Queen said, that would have been better still, better and better and better. Her voice went higher with each better, till it got quite to a squeak at last. Oh, much better, said the Queen, her voice rising into a squeak as she went on, much better, better, better.
That's very good.
You were saying?
Well, it beats what Wikipedia had. But yeah, that's a much better fact.
Mm. Thank you.
I hadn't heard that before, actually.
Yeah. Actually, I might as well talk about it. I did a thing. If you Google Sgt. Pepper photos, where I was sourcing...
Very good website.
...album, all the people on the album cover and trying to
find out. I love the way it came out, like a little bit at a time on Twitter for ages. Same here. I was going, oh, God, is that one? Oh, I never knew that one.
Mm. It was fascinating. It was just a labour of love. I won't go into it too much now, but it was... Yeah, and then people
it's
started
It's relevant
getting,
to this, what we're talking
about. It certainly is relevant.
Yeah, yeah, people started getting involved, and I had a real problem getting hold of the William Burroughs picture, because there was one from the same... It was a photo session in Paris, and there was a photo that was clearly from the same session, but it was a different photo. Mm. And I contacted Barry Miles, who was friends with... Macca in the 60s and written books with him, and he came back and said, no, that is the photo, but when they cut it out and blew it up, it was a strange angle. And I'm thinking, no, that's a different photo. And then Richard Littler, who does Scarfook, he's a huge William Burroughs fan, he got in touch with me, and he went through dozens and dozens of books, couldn't find it. And eventually I just get this random email from nowhere saying, Barry Miles is an arse. This is the photo.
His wife.
So, yeah, Barbara Miles. And yeah, but it was a labour of love. So yeah,
Did you talk to Peter Blake at all?
I tried to. Well, no, he's no longer. Oh, Peter Blake. Yeah, sorry. Yeah. No, I'm thinking of John Cooper, Michael Cooper.
Okay.
You know, Mike.
That's not helpful.
Tommy Cooper.
Tommy Cooper took the photo.
He's on the cover, though, isn't he, Tommy Cooper?
He is, yeah.
I contacted...
William Blake, were you thinking of?
Yeah,
he's totally dead.
Yeah, he is
dead. He's been dead for ages.
I tried, but I didn't get through.
I wonder, he probably knows about it.
Most of the pictures were from Michael Cooper, who actually took... set up the photo
really?
Shoot.
Cool.
And the ones...
So what's he do now then? What's his...
He's passed away, sadly.
Oh, right.
But his son's friend contacted me and said his son has obviously inherited...
So he was like an art technician, was he, or something? Or
yeah, he basically coordinated the whole photo shoot.
Right, right.
But, yeah, the last few... There's about four or five I can't find, and I can guarantee... They are all his friends, and I think they're personal photos from a private collection.
I love the stuff where there's photos from the things that were behind.
Mm.
Yes.
You can't actually see.
Yeah.
That's great. But that cover is kind of interesting as well, because for years I'd never realised it was full scale.
Yeah.
I always thought they were just like chopped out and dropped into the middle. Obviously the Beatles were real, and then the models of the Beatles from Two Swords or whatever it was, and the thing in the front. But I thought all the other stuff was photo montage. But when you see the making of the album cover, it's incredible, isn't it?
I just love they're so arsed. They even got the flower bed thing.
Mm.
That's amazing. I'd never have thought of doing that. I guess they wanted a kind of village band vibe going on with the flower bed.
But that's going back to the thing of that's interesting in the music as well, is the way that the Beatles are looking back and forward at the same time. So they're going, okay, this moment is psychedelia, but also we're going to look back to Victoriana as well at the same time. Mm. It's bonkers, and this is why it's kind of cut through, isn't it? Because it's such an original vision.
Yeah, and it's so aesthetically pleasing to look at as well. There's not one part of that cover, maybe because we're so familiar with it, but there's not one part of that cover that your eye doesn't like looking at. Whether it be the montage of the pictures, the band themselves, but even like the colours used around the edges and everything, it's just lovely. Bloody little mic out of the way. 1, 2, 3, 4.
Fixing a hole.
Yeah.
Now, there were rumours this was about the horse.
Mr. Ed. Yeah.
Really, were they on heroin that early?
No, they weren't.
Hasn't Macca subsequently said it was about pot? Like a fun song about smoking pot.
Okay, go on. I haven't heard this.
I've got it from Wikipedia.
I'm sorry, I haven't read that then.
He says, Macca said it was an ode to pot. And George Burns sang it in the Sgt. Pepper movie. Have you seen that?
The Bee Gees one.
Yeah.
Oh, yes, I've seen that. Yeah, yeah, with the cover. What about the one? What about the Beatles film of The Birth of the Beatles?
I might have done. I've seen quite a few of them.
Because I remember seeing it when I was a kid and never heard of it ever since. And I have kind of searched for it, but never can quite... I don't know if it was a bad dream, like some heavy cheese or something.
There were quite a few
Nick
of them.
Cotton played George Harrison.
Yes.
Yeah.
But there's also another one where... There's also another one...
Oh, no.
There's also another one where Peter Capaldi plays George Harrison.
He did, yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's one where... Sinister way.
Yeah, most of them have got Americans going, I'm from Liverpool.
Yeah.
Isn't it time for another one?
Yeah.
Ben, proper one. This could be...
Come on. Yeah. So who did the covers on that then? It was lots of different bands.
It was the Bee Gees, Peter Frampton.
Yeah.
Frankie Howard.
Yeah,
oh, all the George big guns Burns came out for this, and yeah.
Billy Preston.
Yeah, and wasn't there,
there was a lady, I can't remember. Your man from Just Good Friends, Paul Nicholas.
Oh, Paul Nicholas was on it, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, he's got a good voice, but...
He's dancing with the captain.
Generally speaking, it was quite an appalling, dreadful piece of crap.
It's fucking appalling. The Frankie Howard does Me, Mr. Mustard, and it's so awful.
Yeah.
He's getting massaged by two robots.
Mm. I do remember the Beatles animated TV show as well. That weirdly crept onto British television in the 80s, I think.
Where everybody sounds like John Lennon. Hello, I'm in the Beatles.
And they do a lot of George. Running like that. Running off and stuff.
The George accent was particularly... But they were the guys behind Yellow Submarine.
Yeah, they later did.
Did all the animations for that.
Oh, so it was a British company that did it?
No, it was an American company.
Oh, right, I was going to say, yeah. I thought it was...
Mm-hmm. But they wisely got British voices to do Yellow Submarine rather than Americans.
Michael Angelos.
Yes.
Yes.
And, I can't remember his name.
And Geoffrey Hughes, who played Eddie Yates.
Yep.
Doing Paul McCartney.
Yeah, he was very good, though. He does sound like Paul.
Yeah.
And the guy, I can't remember his name, he died a couple of years ago. He was in The Italian Job.
Michael Caine.
Not him. No, the guy who gives Michael Caine his car back when he's come back from prison.
Oh, him. I know who you mean.
Yeah.
Edit.
Should I look it up?
I did. Looked up on Wikipedia.
Don't worry.
IMDb.
Oh, it doesn't matter, does it?
It doesn't.
Who fucking cares?
Cut it out. I'm just going to leave you hanging. Who is that bloke? Anyway, moving on.
Yeah.
Not John.
Just fade up the tumbleweed noise.
Yeah.
Oh, the power. Yeah,
what were we the light about? Tapping of keys.
Fixing a hole.
Fixing a hole. Good song.
Mm. Next.
Yep.
Fixing. It's a nice bit of harpsichord. Nice.
It's brilliant.
Bit of harpsichord.
It's a bit song. Of. It's a bit of a, from a song, from a song musical point of view. It's basically, it's a sort of sequel to Michelle. It's got the same chord progression in it as the Michelle intro.
Yeah, I did also pick up, it's got the same little riff that was also used in Good Morning. Good Morning.
Oh, in the second part. The Steptoe and Son bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which, why is it Steptoe and Son?
Because Steptoe and Son does that kind of chord progression as well.
Well, the music from the TV show.
No.
In fact.
Old Man Steptoe used to do that progression. Because he was sitting at the bar thinking.
Probably more accurate. A more accurate one would be the Self Preservation Society.
Yes.
It uses the same word.
Yeah. Yeah. She's leaving home. We're moving on to kitchen
sink drama. Sink.
Yeah,
that's the one.
Yes.
Kitchen drinks armor. I was going to say.
Tracy Jacks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You've got a theory on that, haven't you?
Yeah, that's it. They're the same.
you're just going to say Tracy Jacks a lot.
I don't know anything more than that.
Yeah.
I'm just hoping that the listeners will fill in that intelligent.
If thought. You could, listeners, yeah.
Yeah. Just carry that on. Probably listen to Tracy Jacks and go, yeah, he's got a point there, or. No, he's talking about.
Tracy Jacks gets his house bulldozed at the end, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does a Reginald Perrin, doesn't he? Runs into the sea, but is arrested by the cops.
That's right.
Dragged home and feels bad about it. So he doesn't really do the same at all.
No,
but
nothing.
I guess it is a story of a person and their day. I think.
It's a story.
Yeah.
It kind
it's
of
a song as well.
There in terms of, yeah, you got two out of possible 500 there.
Yeah, that's enough for me, though. I've got low standards.
Yeah. I've got zilch so far.
All of the clues are there.
No, it's a beautiful, beautiful piece of music composed, not by, orchestrated, not by George Martin.
No, Mike Leander.
Mike Leander. And so you've got this beautiful harp intro.
Which George was utterly gutted about.
Martin, this is.
Yeah, George Martin. He was, I think, basically he was busy for one day or something. And Paul grabbed this other guy. Oh, can you just, you know, they've worked together from day one. And he just suddenly pulled this random guy and said, oh, can you do the score for this? And
Phil Spector was busy, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was unavailable.
Yeah.
And George Martin, to his dying day, unfortunately, regretted it. I don't know how his would have differed, because it sounds like a George Martin
it
score.
It really does.
Anyway,
you wouldn't know. I mean, he still conducted it and everything, didn't he? So,
which must have just, you know, stabbed, you know, put the knife in again.
The baton in the back.
Yeah.
But how true is it?
It's true.
Is it totally true?
It's
I mean,
true.
or is it that someone did it that day and then he came back and rejigged it all?
Ben, it was on Wikipedia.
It's on Wikipedia. Yeah. It's a fact. It was an internet fact, was it?
I have seen George.
We've done a lot of research on this, so don't question.
I'm pretty sure in the 20 years ago today South Bank thing, George Martin mentions it as well.
Oh, George Martin, he's said that a number
he's
of times.
He's gone over it, has he?
Yeah.
He's cross about it still.
He's pretty. Well, not now.
Well,
he was.
However, George, smooth segue, however, George did have his moment on Being for the Benefit of Mr. Kite, had a field day experimenting with tape loops.
Absolutely. This is him and his goon show element, isn't it?
Mm.
You know, Peter Sellers' goons element and mixing, splicing. Amazing.
Now, lots has been said about how incredible technological advances on the Peppers album, but how was it taken forward from that point? Because I know that there's all this stuff where they have to like basically invent it on the spot and kind of make, you know, all they've got the technicians are in trying to push this equipment as far as it'll go to give them the very speed and all this kind of stuff. But then how was there a moment after that where all these things that they'd learned were then applied to the equipment? Or I just wondered, you know, because it's always talked about, isn't it? It's like how seminal this album is in terms of its technical approach, but I just wonder what the next step was and what was the next album that used those approaches were.
Well, ADT, automatic double tracking, which they'd started with Revolver, actually was the first time, but it was it's soaked in that.
But also, isn't this the first time and a band has taken like 6 months to do an album? That's something that went forward. Like bands like 10cc, for instance, would have been heavily influenced by this because they didn't really tour. They just sat in a studio taking 6 months to use all the... use the studio as their playground. Like, that's the first time a band's done it, because up to this point, bands were like knocking out an album in a week.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it was basically a live version, wasn't it? They'd practice until they were perfect, and they'd go in and it would all be mic'd up and bosh.
Yeah, you get the occasional vocal overdubs, which, like you say, is now on Revolver became a thing, because I remember reading John Lennon hated doing double tracking, and this came in, and so he didn't have to do it anymore.
Yeah.
And Pepper was the first time a band had gone, no, we're going to take 6 months to do this thing. You know, Ringo Starr says that for this album, he played bongos and drums a couple of days during the whole thing.
Yeah.
And then spent the rest of the time doing nothing.
It's very much Paul's album, obviously. But, I mean, John, at this time, was very much into his Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds pills. And he was just a very subservient role in the whole album. I'd say the White Album was a more honest album because it's primarily a John album. But this is more of a Paul one, so it's got that kind of professional sheen.
What would you say? It's more an honest album. I mean, is it? I know that I've heard the saying people say about White Album is more than trying to play like a band again.
Mm.
Is that? But the difference between studio and people jamming together is there an honesty between the kind of artificial version or crafting songs through technology against or just playing?
Mm. Well, I think Sgt. Pepper was a production piece, isn't it? They were writing songs and then spending some... The White Album, they were just strumming guitars in India for a lot of it. And that's kind of what it was. And John especially, he was trying to get together with Yoko, and he went with Cynthia to Rishikesh, and he was writing all these songs about yearning for Yoko. So from his perspective, definitely. But I think Paul as well, and George definitely, because he'd found his spiritual... this.
Hmm.
That's kind of killed the conversation.
Well, I was going to say
about India and Yoko. And
you'd be remiss not to mention the poster this song's based from.
Yes,
when they were doing the Strawberry Fields video in Sevenoaks, John went into an antique shop and saw that circus poster on the wall.
Yep.
And he's literally transcribed the whole song from it.
Yeah, he was effectively doing nothing at all at this period. He was just literally reading. Most of his songs on this album are taken from newspaper articles.
Now, is that Burroughs? Is that Burroughs affecting him, do you think?
It could be.
Because it's kind of like cut-up stuff, isn't it?
Yeah.
And it's automatic writing and going, I will just take... The world will give me my lyrics and I will, you know, take them where I find them kind of thing.
I don't know if it was... I know he was reading Burroughs, but I think it purely was bone idleness a lot of it, because by his own admission he said
did choose the right poster to do it. Could have been something really dull, couldn't it? Could have been like a menu at a fish and chip shop.
That would have been good.
Battered cod and
could have been a copy
onions twice.
Could have been a copy of Razzle.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's you can't underestimate that. I don't think it's bone idleness. He saw it and he knew that there was something in it. I mean, it's a fascinating poster, isn't it? And there's plenty of other posters which would have been much duller, no doubt, you know.
It's banned by the BBC, this song.
Banned?
Mm-hmm.
Why is that?
Because it says Henry the Horse, and they thought there was an allusion to heroin.
Jesus, it's riddled with heroin problems itself.
It is, isn't it?
When did they ban it? Was that is that later?
No, I think that's when it came out, because they used to play the bit tracks from the albums on the radio, yeah. Best Henry fact about Sergeant. I've just remembered the best fact about Sergeant Pepper is that before it came out, when they got the first pressing of it, Macca went to a party at Mama Cass's flat, which was the one she died in, and then later Keith Moon died in. So a very nice flat.
No,
and they played it. Was it? You've heard this story as well. They played it at like dawn or something. They had all the windows and doors open in the summer, and they played it to the whole of London.
Mm.
That's quite. I like that story.
Yeah.
I thought it was going to end with something like everyone said it was crap.
Yeah, bloke leaned out the window and went, turn it down.
What's this? Rubbish.
And that man was Albert Einstein. Yeah.
Yeah.
Within You, Without You, George is really moving into his Indian mysticism.
I bloody love this song.
With this one. You do, yeah. There's a
pro and anti, isn't there? A lot of people skip the Indian stuff, but I really like it.
What? What do you do that for?
I don't know. A lot of people do, though. What I love about this is...
That's CDs for you, though.
Yeah.
You want to listen to it on the vinyl, that's skipping it would be a pain.
Mm. But George Martin, again, East meets West. Because he got all the orchestration mixed in with the indie music. It works so well. His cello bits in this are awesome. Imagine listening to this when you're off your face.
Don't have to.
You don't have to.
Well, you can, but from the sounds of it, you can get high just from the essence of heroin littered around this album.
Which yeah, it was made didn't pure exist. Heroin, wasn't it?
Apparently, if you melted down the vinyl and injected it into your veins,
you'd die. Yeah.
Die.
Yeah. Straight away.
Yeah.
So there you have it. Insight into Within You, Without You by the Beatles.
A lot of heroin.
Yeah. When I'm 64, this is an old Cavern song.
Yeah, he wrote it when he was 16. Because Macca's dad was a big bands man, wasn't he? So I guess he wanted to write one like his dad does.
Just like Elvis Costello.
Yeah.
Looping back to Spike.
Yes.
With his head in a jar.
There you go. Yeah.
Did and the Jim Mack band, there's a photo, again, that is exactly like the Sgt. Pepper cover.
Mm.
With Jim Mack standing by a big bass drum and a load of people standing around, so that could have been an influence as well.
And, yeah, they decided to very speed it so he'd sound younger.
Yeah.
Which is a bit weird.
Why?
I don't know.
Very but then, subtly, though, isn't it?
It's like half a step.
Yeah. When you speed stuff up or slow stuff down, you've got like a grace of about 2 or 3% before you can notice it, and that sounds terrible. With vision as well, you can speed stuff up. So I get, you know, I was watching that BBC programme and they were going on about, that's on recently, and they were going on about the very speeding of that track, and I never noticed it before, to be honest. Mm. So it's dead subtle, that.
I only noticed it because when I was a teenager, I learned to play guitar because I bought this Beatles guitar book, the really massive one with the coin on the front. And it's really good if you learn to play guitar because it starts off at Love Me Do and it ends at Abbey Road. So by the time you get there, you're broken up with yourself. Yeah. But you're dealing
married
with like...
conceptual artists.
You're dealing with... Well, yeah. And you've taken lots of heroin.
Yeah.
But you're dealing with diminished chords, augmented chords, really complicated stuff. So it's a really good way of learning to play guitar. But when I'm 64 in the book, it says it's in C and then you play it along the record and then you find out the record's in C sharp.
Yeah.
So they've just shifted it up half a step. But I don't know why. I know this so he'd sound younger, but he still kind of sounds like the same, really.
I wonder because Brian Wilson did the same thing on Pet Sounds with Caroline No.
Mm.
Again, for the same reason, because he wanted to be portrayed as this young surfer dude, which he never was anyway.
But he always sounds like that.
Yeah.
A young surfer dude.
He does. But I'm wondering if that's...
It's not like he's Barry White, is it?
No. Well, he's not far off it these days, actually.
But who
came first?
Yeah. I mean, his sound... Because they made those tracks about surfing, that is the sound of the young surfer dude, isn't it?
Mm. Yeah.
I've never heard a surfer dude... I don't know. Would they sound like... Have they all emulated the Pet Shop Boys? That's not right.
I don't know.
Oh my god, yeah. I'm lost.
Pet Shop
Why
Boys.
Did we have to do heroin before we did this thing?
It's I
not,
know.
It's not helping at all.
The method.
Yes.
Methadone.
Oh, hey.
Oh.
Cut all that.
It's all going well.
So, when I'm 64, right. Yeah, fuck it, I'll edit all this.
It's very good.
It's going to be about 3 seconds long.
8 out of 10. Next.
That's a bit mean. When I'm 64. Oh, was it the music from
Points of View?
Points of View.
Yeah, well, it was. Because he literally says, doesn't he, at the end?
He says.
It was Barry Took's Points of View.
Yeah. So I heard it a lot through the 80s.
Same here.
Because I know you're a big fan of Points of View.
Well, yeah, we used to watch Points of View. It was up there with Craig.
I was Wogan. Until they complained about Wogan's penis, and then I wouldn't watch it anymore.
I never saw Wogan's penis. What was that?
He did. Was he was doing Points of View,
he was
ironically?
Sitting in a very provocative manner.
He was wearing very tight trousers, and you could see the little Wogan.
Yeah.
The line of it.
Yeah. Yeah. I tell you what, no wonder he's got a deep voice.
Yeah.
Carrying that around all day.
That was in Points of View, was it?
It was, ironically.
And what was the complaint?
That they could everyone see could see his cock. Because I think
Barry Took read that out.
Barry Took was long dead at this point. It was when Points of View was a bit like, have I got news for you? They had a guest host every week on Points of View.
Yeah.
One week it was Wogan and his penis. The The next week, presumably someone else.
I just like the idea of someone at the BBC overdubbing the letter. And a letter from Barbara from London. I can see Terry Wogan's cock. Well, Barbara.
I'm not happy about it.
Jeff from Essex. Did you see the size of Wogan's penis? Nearly made me finish my soup.
So, yeah, so that's when I'm 64.
69, all right.
Lovely Rita. Meet a maid.
Isn't she?
Isn't she? This is
this is them doing Pet Sounds, isn't it? Mm. You've got that big harmony section.
Big old harmonicas.
Yeah.
Pinched from... Well, not pinched, yeah. But they were used on Pet Sounds.
So. Yeah.
Yeah, another story one, isn't it, basically? So.
Yeah.
Yeah, Macca's... Yeah, well, his ones are traditionally impersonal, aren't they? So they're always characters rather than about himself.
I like the bit where
he's about himself, though, isn't he? Because he's Meta.
Yeah.
Meta.
You mean
meta
in terms of Wes Craven's Meta.
Yes.
Yeah.
But also met her. So he'd met her. So he's singing about meeting her. So it's about him.
It's three pronged.
It's so clever.
She's a meter, he's met her, and it's meta.
it's so clever.
It's so clever. Yeah. I'm just overwhelmed by the cleverness through coming at me through history in mono.
Yeah.
Meta maid. Yeah. Meta maid. What's the meta maid?
She was very self-aware when he met her.
She was completely... Yeah, it was all
but
about...
But she's got a sister or two.
Yeah.
Which is suggestive, I think.
Yeah, there's a lot of fish and finger pie, subtle...
Yeah, Norwegian wood type deals, you know, like...
Yeah.
Sitting on the sofa with a sister or two. Hey?
Heroin.
And then you get the comedy...
it's about heroin. Sister, it actually means syringe.
Or mother superior. Habits.
I always thought that Sister Morphine, I told to go back to the Rolling Stones all the time, but Sister Morphine was Sister Murphy.
Right.
I mislistened to it and for years thought it was Sister Murphy.
Yeah.
Kind of makes sense in the song.
So what, you're revealing a lot in this. You were listening to a record too slow for ages and didn't realize.
Yeah.
You listened to the Rolling Stones and didn't realize half of it was missing.
Yeah.
And you listened to the Rolling Stones again and you misheard it.
Yeah.
You're saying a lot about yourself.
It's just experience, how I experience music.
By not really paying any attention. Yeah.
It's a problem, you know.
Yeah.
It's a fresh perspective, though.
Yeah.
What are we on?
We're on.
You did lovely Rita, tick.
Lovely Rita, 8 out of 10.
Sorted. I'd go 7.
Good morning. Right, I've got a very interesting fact about this. It's the first time the Beatles allowed one of their songs to be used on a TV show, which was The Monkees.
Did they cover it?
No, Mickey Dolenz had met them during the recording of Sgt. Pepper.
Yep.
And there was...
This is meta, isn't it?
It
is. Yes.
Bloody hell.
They were filming a show where an alarm clock went off. And Mickey Dolenz was there during the recording of Good Morning, Good Morning. Asked them, can we use it as the alarm? Macca said yes, and history was made.
Wow.
Just deal with that for
what
a moment.
What did the Beatles think of the Monkees then? Was there ever anything...
They were friends, weren't they?
Yeah.
But they must have been felt a bit icky about it.
I don't think so. I think they were so far above that, and they were kind of, you know, the Monkees 2 years, really, they lasted. Didn't they?
They went to India with Mike Love.
Yes.
I mean, if you're ambivalent about Mike Love, then you're going to think the Monkees are great. the Good Morning, Good Morning contains one of my favourite Beatle lyrics, because it scans so beautifully.
Mm.
That's it, yeah. Somebody needs to know the time. Glad the time here.
Mm. Play on words.
It's such a rewarding thing to say and hear.
And a mention of the Thora Heard show.
Meet the Wife. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's an insight into Lennon's...
And it's got that weird thing that he puts at the end about every animal that can eat the other animal.
Which didn't quite work, did it?
Doesn't really make sense. I mean, it starts off with a lion, doesn't it? And then gradually goes weird.
Then it veers into a fox hunt.
Fox hunt, yeah.
But by that premise, a cockerel can eat basically lions, elephants.
They were on heroin at this point.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. What, the animals?
All of them.
A shocking image.
So the reprise, which is, that's really the only time the concept comes in as a concept, really, doesn't it? By putting the reprise in. The whole of the album wasn't really a performance of Sgt. Pepper playing these songs. It was basically an album of connected songs, but not really as a performance by Sgt. Pepper. But putting the reprise in suddenly gives you the impression.
Well, it's like they're there in the background, isn't it? It's like they were watching while these songs were going on, or it's like a break in the... In the performance, like a variety act, isn't it? So each of the songs come on and do their thing, and then go away and come on, and then Pepper's Lot come on because it's they're the biggest one on the list on the billing, aren't they?
It's in a different key to the original one as well. So it's, that sounds rockier somehow.
Oh, it's much rockier. It's
there's some great George solo stuff at the end as well. A lot of people don't rate George as a guitarist. It really baffles me.
Really.
Yeah.
Who are these people?
I don't know. I've seen a lot of people. Obviously, there's the boring Ringo trope that people think is a shit drummer, and he isn't.
He's a fantastic drummer.
Brilliant. But yeah, George, very underrated guitarist, I think. He's not seen as one of the greats, even though everyone, because he's part of the Beatles. But like, I think a lot of people just don't see him as like one of the great rock guitarists. But he is.
And he ran handmade films.
Exactly.
On top of that, so he's had a double brilliant career.
Without him, you wouldn't have Life of Brian.
With no.
Time Bandits.
Yeah.
Shanghai Surprise.
And some other films. Maybe Chris could drop them in back in the recording studio from Wikipedia.
How to Get Ahead in Advertising.
what's the one?
I'm gonna edit it, so I'm saying one in between both of you.
Please do.
Yeah, with a completely different ambience.
Yeah.
Like wind blowing in the background.
And just a play and record
what's
sound.
What's the Michael Palin
the
one?
The Missionary.
That was it. Not to be confused with The Mission.
No, God no.
Because that would be quite a good double bill.
Maggie Smith wasn't in The Mission, was she?
Wasn't it? Wasn't her going over the waterfall at the end?
Private Function.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Another good film.
Oh, hang on. Long Good Friday.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Sorry, I keep clicking my finger, but That's right.
So we end with A Day in the Life, which is importantness again, for Kenny Everett. Where do you even begin with this song?
It's my favourite one.
Me too.
And it makes me cry. And it
how
makes me cry.
So, how
losing his mind blown out in a car. Losing life blown out in a car. It always feels really terrible and sad. And you can really, I don't know, it makes me cry every time I hear it.
Wow.
But I cry at adverts as well, so I'm quite an easy crier.
Which ones do you cry at?
Oh, anything. Certainly, if I'm in the cinema, I'll cry at the drop of a hat.
Butterkiss.
So, you know, I'll need films that have got quite long... when I go to see a film, I check it's got long credits at the end, so the tears will dry before I leave the cinema.
Before you get papped.
Yeah, or just people look at me going, ooh, why is an old man crying?
Mm.
Anyway,
it's quite touching.
Yeah. It's a cut and shut, this song, isn't it? You got to put a Paul song and a John song.
Yeah. So it's a cut
together.
And shut and cut, though, isn't it? Doesn't it jump back out?
It does.
Yeah.
And you get
is great, isn't it? Oh. Because that's in the way the whole album's been like that, with emotion to emotion to emotion, and this compresses it into one song where you kind of jump out of one story into another, and basically the two styles meeting, isn't it? Of John's, putting together the newspaper style Burroughsian cut up stuff, and then back out into a story, and then back to the cut up.
You've got John's beautiful song. You also got Macca's really tender, beautiful piano. Yes. All the way through John's stuff.
Yeah.
He puts on those little fiddly motifs, and they're just beautiful.
And Ringo's drumming on this.
Yes. So good.
Percussion.
Like, it's so untraditional drumming. That's not even a word, I know. But it's so not right. If you were to sit down and say, right, you're going to drum this bit, you wouldn't do that, but it works so well.
Yeah.
It's just phenomenal.
Well, he's left-handed as well, isn't he?
Yeah, so he plays a right-handed kit left-handed.
Yeah.
What? How's it even work?
He does all his roles.
Like an in-train and out-train.
Yeah, he does all his roles backwards. That's why they sound so strange.
And the image in my head now is odd.
Yeah.
He doesn't play with the drumsticks the other way around.
I see him masturbating.
It's just...
does he drum with the drums on the ceiling?
Yeah.
Yeah. He's like the fly.
See, I know nothing of music, so it's intriguing me.
No, it's phenomenal stuff in this. Everything's good. The bass line's good, the guitar's good, everything.
And the orchestration is...
Oh.
Which was an afterthought. Well, not an afterthought, but they just left a space for the dum 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 dum.
They got Mal Evans to count.
Yep, the little, so you can hear the alarm clock.
When you hear that bloke going 5, 4, that's Mal Evans counting down the bars to the Macca bit, and then the end as well. But the end's brilliant because the last note. They got all the pianos and organs and everything in Abbey Road. And they counted down, and then they got everyone to hit it. But what's really interesting about the remaster that came out recently is it shows you the ending they had originally, where they got everyone to go, doesn't sound great compared to what they used in the end.
But isn't it that also, from my extensive watching of the documentary about this only a day ago, that they all hit the piano and then they turn it up while it's supposed to be fading out, which is quite odd.
You can hear a squeaky chair in the air conditioning units.
Because you'd think that it would just amplify all the hiss that's in the recording, but it doesn't seem to do that.
No.
So I don't know how they manage that.
I think it's just George Martin
wizardry,
magic,
and he had the mic so close.
Yeah,
and literally just turning. And at the end, the attenuation is just,
because isn't it like 5 pianos and then a harpsichord and the other crazy,
some sort of organ as well, some
organy thing that they have. Yeah.
Talking of moments that make you cry, I don't know why it makes me well up a bit. There's a bit in the anthology film that was on TV, you know that one, where Martin plays the take that's on the anthology album of Lennon counting himself in for this, and he says "Sugar Plum Fairy, Sugar Plum Fairy." I don't know why, that just seems like really ethereal and emotional, and it just hits me.
I think that's the one with Paul listening to it as well, and then they're just both. I think. Yeah, because they both start listening, and then it's just John's voice.
Yeah.
And you just see their faces thinking...
that's probably what it is.
Shit, I miss him. Yeah. And they just lose it for a moment, and then get back into, anyway, the production technique.
Yeah.
It's, a very touching moment.
I always find that really haunting, all the kind of the studio chatter. I find that... But it's the same, I get the thing... Have you ever listened to continuity recordings for TV from the past?
Yes.
When they go, and it's 12:15 now, and we're closing down, tomorrow we'll be skiing. And that, I find that really devastating, that kind of thing. And it's the same thing, it's just lost words, isn't it? That should never be heard, should never have been recorded and kept, but are just like trapped.
In time,
Yeah.
Like tears in the rain.
Yeah, we're all crying in the room now.
Okay, well, on that sad bombshell, we're going to just roll up in a ball, weep, and hug each other naked.
And take some more heroin.
Yeah, we're just going to take solace in lots and lots of heroin and fish and chips, which will be a beautiful thing. So thank you very much to my two amazing, wonderful guests, John Rain.
Thanks.
And Ben Wheatley.
Thank you.
And we will be back for episode 3. Stay tuned.